This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. A little girl, Celeste Rivas, just 13 years old tonight. Autopsy bombshell. We learn this little girl partially skeletonized. Her left eye gone. Traces of not only meth, but MDMA in her system. What was done to this little girl before she was killed with a, quote, sharp object? This, as David Anthony Burke, a.k.a. D4VD, the famous musician, whines behind bars. Really? Yes, really. Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Straight out to special guest joining us, Caitlin Becker, senior national correspondent, New York Post, host of podcast NY Post Cast. Caitlin, bombshell autopsy report. And I'm wondering, now that I've seen the autopsy report, why the LAPD insisted it stay under seal for so long. Maybe because it's so incendiary. Remember at the get-go, Caitlin, a lot of news outlets were saying they can't determine COD. We have sources inside the medical examiner's office. They can't tell COD because she's decomposed. One and two, dismembered. BS. Technical legal term. They've had the COD for months now, and that is death by a sharp object. So, what can you tell us? Do we know why the LAPD wanted it kept secret for so long?
We don't know why they wanted to keep it secret for so long. This was determined back in December at the end of 2025. And we did have sources at the Post that we spoke to who told us the same thing that you had heard from other sources as well. They couldn't determine the cause of death. They couldn't say it was a homicide because they couldn't figure out how she died. But this, as you said, explosive bombshell autopsy was so disturbing and gruesome and brutal, but clearly laid out at least two areas where she was very clearly stabbed with something, even to the point where they were noting the angle with which the knife went in. It was between 3 and 9 o'clock. And if you think about going down like this, that's exactly how you would hold a knife. So the fact that this was sitting there for all of these months is baffling.
Caitlin, you've read this autopsy report.
Yes, I have.
Very rarely have I felt nauseous reading an autopsy report.
Gruesome.
I don't even feel nauseous when I go to an autopsy. When I read this, I felt nauseous. I got hot all over because I think of Celeste as that little girl, 13 years old, and bombshell tonight. We are learning that D4VD, a.k.a. David Anthony Burke, met Celeste allegedly when she was 12.
Possibly as early as 11.
He's a grown man. What is he doing with a 12-year-old girl, Caitlin Becker?
Nothing good and nothing legal, Nancy. So the New York Post compiled a bunch of Discord, Reddit, chat room clips and screenshots going back to 2023 and then back to potentially 2021, where she was maybe 11, 12 at the oldest, where they were apparently together, these disturbing messages with people on Reddit and Discord saying that he had a girlfriend. Her name was Celeste. It was something with a C. She was in middle school. So this seemed to be no surprise to some of the fans who were operating in some of these chat rooms and circles. One of them looked like it was even a conversation between the two of them in a chat room, where it's October 2023, where someone that appears to be David says, is Celeste here? And a screen name that appears to be Celeste says, David Bark or Burke, but it was, she wrote B-A-R-K-K-K-K-K to just be kind of cutesy as a 12-year-old would be online. But even going back further, Nancy, her missing persons flyer indicated that she was in Hello Kitty sandals, which just that image in and of itself is troubling. It gives you an idea of just how young she is. But there was a post that David had posted of a photo that included some Hello Kitty Crocs that you could see at the bottom, and then a caption where he made some disturbing reference to the Hello Kitty girl that got him in 2021. So now we're talking about grade school aged. It is so troubling and grotesque in so many ways to know that information that we uncovered, and then you put it with the way she was found by investigators. It really does make you sick to your stomach.
Philip Dubé joining us, veteran criminal defense attorney, joining us out of this jurisdiction, L.A. The Hello Kitty girl, 12 years old, when D4VD puts the moves on her, she's missing an eyeball and she's skeletonized. Thoughts? Why shouldn't this be a death penalty case?
This is not a capital case. It might be on paper, but this young man has absolutely no criminal record. I do not see a jury ever executing him. I think best case scenario is that this could result in a plea bargain. But even then, I think it's highly doubtful because his max is life without parole. What on earth would be the incentive for him to take a deal that would involve life behind bars anyway? So I actually think that this may be overfiled.
You know, Philip Dubé, I like you. But I got to ask you a question. When you do all that manscaping right there, do you ever actually look at yourself in the mirror? How can you say that? The girl was 12. Celeste Rivas was 12 when D4VD, the big musician, puts moves on her. And now she's dead in his trunk, her body in pieces. Her left eyeball is gone. Wonder what happened to that. Joe Scott Morgan is going to tell you that when you decompose, your eyeball doesn't just disappear. Where is her eyeball? Why did she have MDMA in her system? Meth in her system? Why? Why is this not a death penalty case? If this is not a death penalty case, what is?
There has to be some evidence, A, that he's the one who actually did it. Merely having a corpse is not proof beyond a reasonable doubt that he is, in fact, the actual killer. At most, what you have is him having constructive possession of her because her remains were found in the car. Now, having said that, the jury is going to have to find, assuming it even goes to a penalty phase, that he's irreformable, irredeemable, and that the only just outcome for him would be California's lethal injection. I predict that no jury will ever execute this young man.
Straight out to Joseph Scott Morgan joining us. I need you, and I need you now. Professor of Forensics, Jacksonville State University, which has an incredible new facility and program for criminal procedure. We've done a lot of recreations together. He is the author of a bestseller, Blood Beneath My Feet, on Amazon, and he is the star of a hit podcast, Body Bags with Joseph Scott Morgan. But all that aside, he is a death investigator with over 10,000 death investigations under his belt. Now, how is a death investigator different from a medical examiner? He goes out to the scene and he sees all the scenes as they are when police find the body. He looks at accidents. He looks at natural causes. He looks at suicide. He looks at undetermined and, of course, homicide. And he knows the difference. Usually one glance and he can tell you. Could you walk us through and try to skip the medical examiner vernacular? Like you're talking to a jury, please, so we can all understand. See, I understand what it means when I read in the autopsy, her left eyeball is gone. How did that happen? That did not happen naturally. I know what it means that MDMA is in her system. Methamphetamine is in this little girl's system. I know what it means that her head is in an actual body bag with handles on it. That's not a trash bag. And that under the body bag, which they had to go get, or is it one of his props for one of his creepy songs about death? Oh, my goodness. That means it's going to be covered with his fingerprints, right?
Yeah.
That said, underneath the body bag, an actual body bag, is a trash bag with her dismembered body in it. You've got her head in one bag, and the rest of her body cut in pieces in another bag. No wonder the LAPD wanted to keep a lid on it.
Yeah.
It's incendiary, it's inflammatory, it's upsetting, and it may have altered the course of this investigation because it is so upsetting.
It is very upsetting. And Nancy, I got to say something real quick. In all of my years, I never thought that I would read an autopsy report where I'm hearing or reading the fact that a body bag is being swabbed for DNA. Nancy, do you know they swabbed each one of those handles? A body bag, this particular body bag, has six handles. Each one of those handles was swabbed. The zipper has been swabbed. So you've got a body bag, and this body bag description is just like the ones that we use at the coroner's office, the medical examiner's office. I don't know about you. I've been at this for a long time. I don't have any body bags at my house. So again, he had to acquire the somehow. And, you know, you can draw from that what you want, but let's get to Celeste, this child. First off, you know, you'd mentioned the skull. The skull is partially skeletonized at this point. Now, in decomposition, and she's been down for a very long time, we will see the eyes collapse within the sockets. That does happen. However, there is considerable insect activity, and I know that this is really horrible, but people need to understand the depth of depravity here. There's insect activity. So you have insects that have been, let's just say, feasting on the remains, okay, all of this time. And this has been contained in this frunk, in the frunk of this car. And I don't know where else it may have been contained at some point in time, maybe within that house. Insects are going to play a big part in this case. But Nancy, here's really kind of the dark thing, if it can get any darker. What they're identifying as fatal injuries on her, we've got the one that is on the left side in her rib cage, and it's actually the intercostal space. And what that means is there's a muscle that runs in between the ribs, okay? That doesn't really go anywhere. She could have bled out from that. It's hard to tell. There is hemorrhage in there. It doesn't affect the lung. But what I want to focus on is the one on the right. If folks at home will essentially go down your chest till you find the base of your rib cage on the right side. This is right at the top of your abdomen. And when the rib cage comes to an end, bingo, you're on your liver. Nancy, a knife, a sharp instrument was inserted to a depth of about an inch and a half, according to the autopsy report. It goes into that liver. The liver is the most, other than the brain, is the most vascular organ in the body. And here's the dark part. Nancy, this was not a quick death. She bled out. We're not talking about somebody that was shot in the head. We're not talking about somebody that, you know, had died in a road accident or something like that. No, she stabbed in the liver. She would have bled out into her abdomen. I've handled multiple cases involving the liver. If you don't have a team of surgeons standing there, there's nothing you can do for them. And she would have had an awareness, Nancy. She would have had an awareness that her life was merely just kind of seeping away with every drop of blood that coursed out of that. Now, a question is, where is the blood? Is there blood in the house? Is there blood in the car? Hard to tell because we don't know what they were able to go back to the scene to capture. But I know that in the immediate, if you could have examined her body like within a couple of days, you would have seen an abdomen that was filled with blood. And I really want people to understand that here. She had blood coursing into her abdomen. It would have been in her bowels, over the top of her bowels, and her eyes would have slowly closed, and there would have been nobody there to comfort her or love her in any way. She was brutally murdered, and then her corpse was brutally abused. You're damn right this is inflammatory, and there's going to be more that's going to come out, and it doesn't bode well for whoever is involved in this.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Can I talk to you about, so many things, Joe Scott. But first, when there's an eyeball missing, I know the eyeballs do collapse upon death, you know, after time passes. But there should have been some residue still in the eye socket to show the eyeball was there, had been there. Mm. Her whole eyeball is gone. It's gone. Did that happen during the dismemberment? Was she hit so hard at some point the eyeball was dislodged? There should be some, at least, residue within the eye socket to show she ever had an eyeball. It is gone, Joe Scott.
Let's take this in from two perspectives, okay? If it was something that was done in the pre-death stage, they would have seen some kind of evidence of hemorrhage indwelling in there. Now, as to whether or not it was removed in a postmortem, who knows at this point in time, because you would have, and actually on the socket itself, I've had cases like this where you would see tool marks because a sharp instrument in the eye socket right here. Okay. If somebody's trying to remove an eye externally, you would see tool marks on this area. My suspicion is, and again, this is very graphic stuff, you're talking about maggot activity at this point in time, and maggots will feast in this area and they'll clean the area out. And I've seen this happen over and over and over.
I still think there would have been residue. I think she struggled when she was first stabbed. She was stabbed multiple times, and that one of the stabs went in her eye.
Well, we'll see if they can actually tie that back. Can I make one more point and I'll shut my mouth?
Please, because I want to get to the fact she's got two missing fingers.
Yeah.
Two fingers are gone, just like the eyeball. You want to tell me maggots marched off with those two?
No. I'm not going to tell you that. What I will tell you, though, is that this injury that she has on the left side, it doesn't communicate with the lung. But, you know, we don't have a weapon at this point in time. Guess what? If they did what I think they may have done, what they're talking about in this autopsy report, they talk about the cortical surface of the rib. That means the outer surface of the rib. That knife or that instrument made contact with that rib. Guess what they can do with this? And you know it. They are going to remove that rib. They'll clean it up, and they're going to turn that rib over to tool mark section, and they will examine it. They can look at it with the unaided eye. They can look at it microscopically, and we can get a sense perhaps of what type of instrument was involved. If it goes into the liver, though it's a solid organ, you can't do tool mark on that. However, that rib, that insult right there, is going to be key here, and they're going to hang on to that. Additionally, and I don't want to jump too far ahead, but with the dismemberment, okay, they're going to take sections of bone from that as well, like the ends of the bone. If you're talking about the femur or the humerus in the arm, the femur in the leg, they'll take the sections out of there where this instrument passed through. I don't think it's the same section. They're talking about that this instrument, whatever it is, passed through both the soft tissue and through the bone. Yeah.
That is a ferocious stab to pass through the soft tissue, which is your skin, fat, muscle, and through the bone, which gives me a very good idea as to how she lost her eye and two fingers. Because, Joe Scott, it says in the autopsy report there are defensive wounds. So if she's doing that and a stab is happening, it could easily go through her left eye. Find markings here and here, maybe on her legs if she's in a fetal position. That's what defensive wounds mean.
Yep. So the trick is, are they going to be able to prove that? And this is one of the problems that you run into. Nancy, let me throw this out at you, okay? If you read that report, they actually use the term liquefied. And so that's what you're dealing with these remains, okay? So we've lost a lot at this point because the cellular degradation that has taken place, it has literally liquefied in the bottom of this body bag. So they're really fighting an uphill scientific battle here to try to understand what actually happened. More to come.
Well, I know this. I know she had defensive wounds. I know that the stab wounds to this little girl were so vicious, it went through the soft tissue to the bone. I know that the defensive wounds most likely mean she's doing this, which could indicate how she got two fingers sliced off of her hand. I know her left eye is gone and that her head is partially skeletonized. And I know that when you pick something up, like a body bag with six handles, this is where you look for DNA. You look everywhere, but this is an obvious choice for DNA to be found. Yes, no.
Absolutely. Points of contact, Nancy. That's what we're looking for. And if any of these idiots did not have gloves on, okay, there's a, and something people don't understand about body bags, there, these nylon handles are very coarse, okay? And so you have a weave that's in there. So this transference of, say, touch DNA that might be there would transfer into those fibers. That's why they're swabbing these. It would not surprise me, Nancy, if they had not taken those handles and clipped them off and preserved those. The body bag itself will be preserved.
Well, okay? They darn well better. That's the last, that's a perfect place to get DNA. It's got like a consistency of rope because your sweat, your touch DNA gets down in those fibers. It's a treasure trove of DNA.
Yes, it is.
Unless they thought to wear gloves. Then we're screwed. But on that body bag, on her body, she was still wearing the black tube top, which leads me back to you, Dave Mack. Not now, but in a moment. I want to pull up that video of a concert where there is apparently a Celeste lookalike up with his family members, relatives, watching his concert. Because according to what we're learning, that concert is after her death. And so that's the concert. But let's see. Is this... right there. Is that a Celeste lookalike wearing the black tube top like her? Or are they trying to pull it over on us that she was still alive? Because I want you to check the dates, Dave Mack, while I speak with Dr. Geralyn Utter. But is that concert after what when we think she's dead? So did they go to that elaborate effort to create a ruse that she's still alive? This is from clips of David on TikTok. She was found in her black tube top. Just let that percolate for a moment. And then, is that a Celeste lookalike at the concert? Okay, that aside, I can't wait to drop that bomb on Philip Dubé. Dr. Geralyn Utter is joining us. She is a renowned clinical psychologist specializing in psych evaluations and risk assessments within the criminal justice system. She is author of Mainlining Philly, Survival, Hope, and Resisting Drug Addiction, Aftershock, How Past Events Shake Up Your Life Today. And she is the star producer of Utter Nonsense, a documentary exploring addiction and mental illness. It goes on. Dr. Geralyn Utter, this girl that we keep talking about, Celeste Rivas, 13, possibly 12, in her Hello Kitty sandals that Caitlin Becker just pointed out, when she catches the eye of D4VD, a.k.a. David Anthony Burke. And I'm talking about this girl's autopsy report and her missing left eye and her face being skeletonized and her fingers being sliced off. And he's whining that he's not getting enough rec time in the can. Rec time, my rear end, recreation time. He's not getting enough fresh air. But do you not see the problem with this dichotomy?
It's a big problem, Nancy. But unfortunately, when you work with individuals like Mr. Burke, you see this type of behavior. And it's really telling regarding everything that Joe Morgan's been going over and what we're talking about regarding the autopsy. It's not about anyone else but him. He's not getting what he wants. He's not getting his time. So really, it's really indicative of the behavior that took place leading up to this poor girl's death. She was perceived as a possession, not a person. And when that possession upsets you in some type of way, messes with your narrative, messes with your worldview, you are expendable. And she was expendable. So another thing that I want to point out that I don't feel like we kind of touched upon is I think he lived very much in a fantasy world where he was obsessed with death. To Joe Morgan's point, how many people do you know have body bags that they carry around? One of the lyrics in the song basically says, I killed you and I didn't even regret it. I killed you and I did, you died and I didn't even cry. So what we're looking at here is not so much your traditional crime of passion, because, you know, I lost control and I loved you so much. What we're looking at here is viewing a young child as a possession. Something happened in his mind or in his fantasy world. And another thing that was happening simultaneously is the fact that we have somebody that is severely, severely obsessed with death, the process of death, inflicting pain and hurting someone. So you put those things together and we have a young girl, a 14-year-old girl, 13-year-old girl that has not only lost her life, but she's lost her life in such a tragic and horrific way.
And to thank Dr. Geralyn Utter, I just want you to think about this disturbing aspect. I'm sure you can verbalize it much better than me. I just know it makes my blood boil. You can get body bags online for about $70. The fact that he thought to get a body bag, an actual body bag, it says so many implications.
There's so many legal implications, but look at the psyche, look at the psychological aspect of what we're talking about. You know, this is, yes, is that an indication of premeditation that this was planned? Absolutely. But the other thing that it tells me is he not only planned to hurt someone or to kill somebody because in his mind, they did something wrong to him. Again, let's touch upon that obsession with death, the process of death, the manner in which she died, how she suffered, how she was tortured, and then to take it to the next level and already have a body bag. I mean, to me, it's not just you're thinking about, you know, disposing of a body. You have a fixated obsession with death and with suffering. So that's just the extra layer of what's going to be unpacked or what people are going to discuss regarding this individual psyche and what's going through his mind.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Why is it, Joe Scott Morgan, it's the pinky and the left ring finger were mutilated? Also, there were fragments, tiny fragments of blue plastic material in the cuts.
Yep, in the cuts.
Now, they get that by taking samples, tissue samples, and they look at them through a microscope, and they can see, unless it's overt and you can see it with the naked eye, they can see tiny bits of blue plastic. What is that?
I have no idea. And I've been scratching my head over this ever since I first got
How about a surgical glove? Those blue plastic surgical gloves?
Well, that's more rubberized. It sounds to me like it's something kind of firm. If it had been blue surgical gloves, they would have used the term latex, Nancy. So for me, and this is what I do know. And if you go back into the report and you read it, there was actually a criminalist there. And people don't really know what a criminalist is, but it's actually a forensic scientist that specializes in trace evidence. They were physically there, Nancy, at the post. There was also one at the scene, by the way. That's mentioned. They collected those items. Now, this is what they're going to do with those. You know, you had mentioned, you know, overtly, we refer to that as grossly. Like, can you see it, as they say, with the unaided eye? I think they could. They're going to take that, look at it, examine it. They're also going to look at it microscopically. And here's one more bit to this that you might find interesting. I think that they're probably going to do chemical testing on these plastic items to try to see if they can understand the origin. Like, is it tied back to some type of product that's out there? I'd actually had, and you, this is kind of interesting, and I don't necessarily buy it, but I actually had somebody say, hey, do you think that this could be a 3D printed thing? And it kind of came apart as they were using it. I'm not buying that necessarily. Whatever it is, I think that came off of this item that's being used to dismember. And no, I don't think it's the same item that was used to stab her with. This has got to be something that's really robust. It's got to be some kind of saw. Now, the trick is it either a manual saw, okay, or is it a power saw of some kind? Maybe a battery-operated saw. And I'm thinking Sawzalls. I'm thinking skill saws. You know, we've already heard about a chainsaw that was not used. Remember Steve, forgive me, I can't remember his last name, but the PI,
right.
He had mentioned that he had found one at the scene and it had never been used.
Steve Fisher.
Yes, Steve. And wow, what a fantastic
right.
job he's done. He said that hadn't been used, but that doesn't mean that something else hasn't been used here. Nancy, this is a huge undertaking. If you've never been around the dead and you're trying to take apart a body, I can't tell you what a monumental task is. We work in the morgue. We have all the appropriate tools. You don't have these types of things just laying around the house.
Straight out to Dave Mack, Crime Stories investigative reporter. Dave Mack, what happened in court?
Nancy, prosecutors provided new information about shocking illegal images found on accused killer David Anthony Burke's cell phone. Los Angeles County Deputy District Attorney Beth Silverman claims the illegal images involving children were uncovered as part of a broad series of search warrants executed on Burke's phone and iCloud. Silverman did not say if any of the images were of Celeste Rivas. Burke's attorneys have insisted he's innocent and are demanding a preliminary hearing begin next week, meaning we might get a look at even more evidence as early as May 1st. Other than the CP found on Burke's phone, prosecutors also revealed a wiretap was used in the investigation. No real specifics about the wiretap other than to say it took place last year. Burke was shackled as he came into court wearing county-issued orange jail jumpsuit. The 21-year-old defendant appeared calm and at times tried to look bored, only speaking briefly to the judge, saying, "Yes, ma'am," as she made sure he understood what was taking place.
Philip Dubay, today it had been the moment we had been waiting for, a much-hyped preliminary hearing. And when you have a preliminary hearing, the state brings on a series of witnesses, or maybe just one witness, like a lead detective that can testify to everything the state knows up until that point. And the judge then determines, is there enough for this to go to trial, as opposed to, you know, a grand jury proceeding where they hand down a bill of indictment. However, what it actually seems to have been is a 3 out of 10. Where it sets the stage for future procedural hearings.
Correct. Right. Every criminal,
what is that?
Right. Every criminal defendant has the right to have their preliminary hearing within 10 court days of the date of arraignment. So sometimes what we will do pre-prelim is we set an interim date, oftentimes the 3 of 10, the 5 of 10 date, to get the discovery. It puts a flame under their tushy to get everything produced to the defense. If they don't get it all, then they have to file a motion to continue the preliminary hearing. But moreover, oftentimes when they are given this heap of discovery on a pre-prelim date, they're gonna need more time to go through it anyway. The DA in the case, Beth Silverman, said that there are terabytes of digital data to be turned over. And I sincerely doubt that Blair Burke et al. Is going to have enough time between the 3 of 10 and the 10 of 10 to get up to speed on this voluminous evidence. They're going to need more time. But the bottom line is they always ask
Hey,
for-
slow it down, Dubay. Slow it down, because in every jurisdiction, they don't call it a 3 of 10 or a 10 of 10. In your jurisdiction, explain in simple terms what a 3 of 10 means. Everybody was expecting a preliminary hearing where witnesses would be called to establish PC probable cause and lay the framework for an indictment, for this to be bound over to Superior Court for a murder trial. Instead, it's more of a status conference.
That's the bottom line. The way it works is, the prosecution legally has 10 days from the date of arraignment to present a preliminary hearing. If it is not presented, it is a speedy preliminary hearing right. The case is dismissed. So what the defense often will do is within that 10-day period, they trail it day for day, maybe to the 2 of the 10-day period, the 3 or the 3rd of the 10-day period, to hope and pray that they get the discovery so that they are prepared for the 10th day themselves, never mind the prosecution, but the defense also needs to prepare. And by demanding a speedy prelim, it puts pressure on the DA to get their act together, or this case is going bye-bye.
Well, as far as I can tell, all we need to present to a judge is the autopsy findings and a witness placing D4VD with Celeste at the time of her murder. And I firmly believe, take off your defense hat one moment, How else would they be able to establish the date of death? They have an actual date of death if they did not have a witness.
My hunch is that the digital all died, all her digital devices. She probably had a strong presence on her cell phone with texting, WhatsApp chatting, emails, social media posts and comments, and everything probably went radio silent. And they probably looked at her phone in tandem with his phone and maybe looked at cell towers where they were both pinging and could see when everything came reaching halt.
Dubay. Nobody. Her going silent, her going radio silent on her social and digital does not a murder prove. There's got to be something else. There's got to be. When you said digital, I thought you meant maybe their text communications between D4VD, David Anthony Burke, and someone else about we got to get rid of the body or what. Let me tell you what just went down. Something to indicate that was the day of the murder or a witness to the incident or a witness to describe what, if anything, Burke said to them. But they have a definite time of death, which in a lot of cases we don't have. And you have to put in your indictment between the days of April 1, 2026 and June 1, 2026, because you don't really know the day, and that will suffice in an indictment. They did not have to give us a date, but we do have a date. So it's either digital communications or a witness, because it sure ain't from the decomposed body.
They may have had a forensic entomologist. They probably looked at the insect activity on the young girl's body, and they could tell based on the insect activity, the larva, etc., almost down to a scientific certainty when she died. And with that...
Is that true, Joe Scott Morgan? Because I've never known of a maggot being able to tell time. You might get within a day or two based on the age of the blowflies or the larva, but you're not going to get an actual date.
No, you're not. God bless Philip, but I got to tell you, you're not going to be able to set your watch by it. Okay. It's very broad. And, you know, and I do concur with Philip. I think an entomologist is going to be involved in this for a variety of reasons we could go into, but you can't, that's not something you can actually set your clock by. You can't look at a maggot husk and say, this person died at this particular time.
Caitlin Becker joining us, senior national correspondent of the New York Post and host of a hit podcast, New York Postcast. Caitlin, so today everyone was expecting the preliminary hearing where we're going to hear witnesses, they were going to be cross-examined. Instead, it was a status conference. Ugh, they're painful. I've been in many of them, and it's basically scheduling. But what is going to happen next?
Well, as for what happens next on the legal front, you know this better than anyone. These things oftentimes take forever, and it's such a process to do the scheduling and the staying of things and all that kind of back and forth.
Is that true, Dave Mack?
Coming up, a status hearing scheduled for April 29th and a May 1st court date.
And what is happening to D4VD behind bars? He's already been segregated because he's too famous to be in GP general population, but yet there are complaints already that he's not getting enough recreation time, not enough fresh air. What does he think this is, a spa?
It is not a spa. It is jail. He's not been released on any kind of bail. There's no way on God's green earth that's going to happen. He gets to shower every other day. He gets a phone call every other day on the same day that he showers. So shower day is a big day for him. Only a couple hours a week of recreation time. He's alone. He's not on suicide watch, but he's alone because they think he, as you said, the celebrity status is too high that something could potentially happen to him inside of the prison. So it's not great in there, nor should it be for him while he's in jail. Like, that is what this is. He's not incarcerated long term, but he's behind bars awaiting trial on some of the most heinous charges that you could possibly have. One of the things that was noted is there wasn't any money in one of his in any of his funds. I don't know if that has changed from when he got in there until you and I are talking now, but it's not pretty for him in there, and it shouldn't be.
Caitlin Becker. He is in the same CI Correctional Institute as Nick Reiner. And there have been many, many other celebrities in that particular jail. So I doubt very seriously that he is being mistreated, or it would be the headline in the New York Post. We would hear all about it.
Yeah, people would be screaming from the rafters on his team. As you said, Nick Reiner's there. Suge Knight has been through there. Tory Lanez has been through there. It's very similar to the MDC here in New York, the one in Brooklyn. It's like when you first get processed, that's the one where Mangione was in, is in, and that's the one where Diddy was in. So it's very much when you're a celebrity and you get caught doing something in L.A., you kind of go to one of these facilities, and it's very often that it's the kind of a repeat of different celebrities. So it's not like this is anything new for the facility or for the corrections officers in there.
We wait as justice unfolds for Celeste Rivas. If you know or think you know anything about this case, no matter if you think it is inconsequential, dial 213-486-6890. We remember an American hero, Deputy John Sandlin, Solano County Sheriff's, California, killed in the line of duty, leaving behind a grieving wife, Kay, and three daughters, Susan, Lori, and Elizabeth. American hero, Deputy John Sandlin. Good night, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.